Blog Talk Radio. Breaking news.
Ushering in a new era. This is the War of the Words. Boom! War of the Words. Cerebral Sundays, man. I love doing these. We get to do whatever the hell we want, man. It's like a free pass every week to say whatever and do whatever on the show. Not that we don't anyways, but, you know, it also gives us an excuse to, once a week, talk about things way outside of MMA. It's amazing how we can connect things to MMA, but sometimes some of these topics we just cannot. And I love bringing on people from all around the MMA community, and I'm especially excited for today's episode, which normally on the Cerebral Sundays, we don't hit up the sponsors really hard and stuff. Kind of just go right into it, right into the conversation for the full hour. But I do want to give a shout out to SSFightStore.com, our sponsor. They put out an awesome commercial today for Conflict 27. So make sure to go on their website or go on Facebook. You can look them up or go to War of the Words on Facebook and watch that commercial, because it is badass. Like, I thought that there was like a fourth Lord of the Rings coming out when it first came on. Like, it was freaking awesome. But anyway, Cerebral Sunday, man, we're going to be catching up with the creepy weasel, man, Steve Montgomery. It's so awesome to have him back on the show. He's like the most reoccurring guest, my digital BFF and longtime partner in crime on this show, who recently has gotten himself involved in some thingy things. And you know what? We're just going to skip all the shit and just bring him straight on the show. Steve, what's good, brother?
Am I alive now? I can breathe.
Yeah, man. First, that's right. I just wanted to, first off, man, I wanted to congratulate you. We ran a poll, like, I don't know, I guess it's been about a month ago, for like everyone's favorite guest on the show, and you tied with the winner. So I wanted to, before we got cracking, say, like, congrats on that there. Everybody loves the weasel.
That's cool. Thank you. Everybody who voted. That's badass.
Hell yeah, man.
That's cool. It's like a politician.
That's how you do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's been a while since we got to catch up, man. We do this thing now on Sunday where we get to talk about whatever the hell we feel like. And MMA, not MMA, we can talk about. It doesn't freaking matter. And this is greatness, especially for us. And we have an hour. Like, we can talk as long as we want. You know, like, usually we have these epic conversations that we have to cut short. So it's on.
Yeah,
it's on tonight.
Right.
It's the freaking weasel hour up in this piece.
I'll go wherever the road takes us.
That's awesome, man.
Well, we can even keep these people entertained that long. We'll have to go for it.
I think, check this out. So here's a little bit, here's a beginning entertainment, yo. So let's peep the legend of the last few months. Now, I'm going to even take it back a little further than that. You've been coming on the show for a while now, and when we first started talking, you were in one phase of your career. It was on a little bit of a, I'm not going to say like a downslope, but the way that you looked at it was a little bit down, and then this rise sort of started to happen, and then all of a sudden, you vanished. You just were like, poof, gone. And I think that that's where we should start, at the point where Steve Montgomery vanished off the earth.
Really quick, and that I am down to start there, but when did we start? You talk about the kind of like the slowness in the career. What do you remember, what like month it was or of what year?
When we it was the very first fight that you had when you went on like your four fight streak, I think, of last year, was right around that time. Was the first time you were having a lot of trouble getting on cards and getting on shows.
That's right.
And
that's
stuff like
right.
that. Do you remember? A lot of trouble. And then that started to fade off as you started getting, like, winning. You went, I think, 4-4, if I remember. And then, all of a sudden, it was weird because
I won in 2013 against an Anthony Lemon kid up in North Carolina, and then wanted to, like, all 2013 had trouble finding fight. And then I had that one with the Michi Asalukwe guy, and then that got canceled before the weigh-ins, like right before the weigh-ins. So that was frustrating. And then finally, you know, Blaine took a fight, and that was that was an awesome fight. But I figured it was going to be another year before I fought again because we were having trouble all that, you know, in April. I remember. All right. So fast forward, literally like exactly 10 months or a year to this year, I vanished.
Boom. Just like poof. Like literally, like we were, you know, we were talking. We had just recently done a show, and then all of a sudden there was no Steve Montgomery on anywhere.
It is crazy to think about that, like, from your point of view, because to me it's like, you know, the hearings and happenings that something was going to go down had been going on for, you know, a month or so, or maybe even more than that, like 2.5 months. So I had, like, a little hint, you know, 2.5 months prior to the whole thing really going full speed. So it's so funny to hear, like, to me it was such a big part of my life and everyday thinking, and, like, everyone else just didn't know. It was weird, man. It really was. It was eerie, but it was nice, too. It was almost like being that private and being, like, it was, you know me, I'm kind of an outspoken person. I don't really, like, keep anything hidden from people. But to, like, keep something hidden and to be, like, sneaky like that, it was, like, it was weird. I liked it, though. It was fun. It was, like, I don't know, it was funny.
I thought it was pretty cool as well. I thought everyone did a great job of kind of keeping the surprise under wraps. You know, they were, like, whispers and hints in the night and stuff, and then all of a sudden it was like, bam, this big explosion, man. Like, how was that for you, seeing that unroll now that you're kind of back and able, like, more free to talk and stuff? How is it seeing that unfolding?
It's pretty crazy, man. It's just like you say, it's just interesting to watch the process unfold. I'm trying to do my best to enjoy every step of it because it goes by fast, you know, so I'm not trying to think. I mean, you know, you have to plan for the future, and you have to, you know, I know what's coming, so I have to plan and do things like that. Everyone does. But, you know, I still try to enjoy every moment of it, like, as it's happening, even while we were on the show, before we were on the show, the preparation, and just enjoy it. It definitely is a little surreal. It's definitely, like, I've kind of gotten to a point where it's like this weird psychological thing. Like, when I'm selling the whole fight thing, I honestly don't feel arrogant when I do it because I feel like I'm just selling a product. Like, I'm not, I feel like Steve Montgomery as opposed to Steve the Creepy Weasel is a completely separate person, and I'm just helping another guy out. And that guy pays me. You know, I feel like I'm myself's manager. It's weird, man. I just have separated from it. So when I hear people talk shit or talk nice, I kind of just, like, it doesn't even affect me. Like, someone could say the most hateful shit. I can cuss, right? Can I cuss?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Well, when people say hateful shit, you know, I'm just completely separated from it. Hold on, my little puppy going crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about that is that, you know, I've had to deal with that myself in a smaller scale, but most definitely in the show that we've done and taking on these roles, like, for Conflict and being in the cage announcing and stuff, and a lot more people slowly knowing me. And then these weird moments where, like, I realize that the shirt that I'm going to wear out today has an impact on what, like money or business or other things of that. Like, it's weird. Like, you know, there's this kind of moment where those things start to happen to you, and I can only imagine on your end that those are even more amplified now than before.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, like you just said, even on the small scale, it's the same thing. It's no different. You know, you're selling it. You know, it's not like you're not trying to be arrogant. You're just trying, honestly, I mean, not to even sound street about it, but you're just trying to hustle. You're hustling and doing your job. You know, I feel like it's my job now. It's like, I love getting in, like, when I get in the cage, you're in that fight mode, and it's like right back to that, all the things that go with being in the cage. But it's like, you know, when you're outside of the cage and you realize that it's the new world, you have to market it or no one will give a shit. And if no one gives a shit, then you cease to do what you love. You know, it's like, so you have to make people give a shit. Well, you got to get good at that. So it's like, it's nice to separate the fighter, and then there's the manager side of the whole thing. And I feel like I have great people that help manage me. They're awesome. But I also feel like truly a part of that system. You know, I feel like I'm managing myself.
Well, and you know, I think that what's cool is that that's something that we hear, like, on the show on War of the Words, man. You know, you've done the show with us, like, all getting on 10 times now. And we've always tried to emphasize, like, the person behind everything. You know, we've always tried to, we get on the show and we hardly get a chance to talk about the actual fights we're supposed to talk about. And that's one of the things I've always loved. And I know that I don't see anybody being able to rip that out of you. I don't. That's kind of like the true blue part of the weasel, you know?
Wait, are you talking about the fights themselves, or?
I'm talking about
rip what out of me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, like, you, the person that you are, your earnest approach to everything, and how you are. I just don't see, you know, anybody being able to take that away from you or change that part of you, or you yourself even losing that piece of you.
It seems so core to you. I mean, I at the end of the day, it's just easier to be honest with yourself and honest with everyone around you. In the sense, like, if you're honest with yourself and you're a scumbag and you truly feel like scumbag things are the right to do, well, then just be a scumbag. It's obviously going to work for you. But for me, it's like, you know, I'm definitely not perfect. I get in bad moods. I do dumb things all the time and mess up all the time. But, I mean, I feel like I'm honest with myself. And all those mess ups and things like that come when I stop being honest with myself. So it's like, you know, I'm not a tough guy. For example, you know, if I'm around a bunch of my friends, like the friends that would typically make you feel like, oh, I'm alpha male. I got to show this tough exterior. I got to do this or that, whatever, you know, if I'm around them and we're all doing security at a really, like, you know, a bar in Delray, which happens all the time, where, you know, my roommate Jake actually is always hiring security guards for different little jobs. So you're just watching the door, checking IDs. It shouldn't be anything crazy, but definitely once in a while you'll get some tough guy. I'm not the guy who's going to use a tough guy talking shit to me as an opportunity to show that I'm tough in front of my friends. I'm going to be true to myself and be like, hey, let's just defuse this. I'm lazy. I want to go home. I got to train. If not tomorrow, the next day, you know, I'm tired. Like, this job's for $60. Do I really want to beat this guy up and then get sucker punched with a martini glass and get my head sliced open? It's like, you know, so I try, like, in any situation, I just try not to be tough. I try to get all the alpha male testosterone, bad decision-making energy out at the gym. And it typically works for me. You give me 3 or 4 days and I'm not at the gym, I do go a little stir crazy.
That's one of the things I always loved about you, dude, is that unique approach, man. Like, back in the day, you used to be like, and you still are, I want to touch on this in a second, like this, the MMA alchemist, man. You'd always have some kind of something you're doing or some kind of organic thing. You like this wizardry going on. I talked to you earlier on the phone, as a matter of fact, when we were setting up the show. You were going to lay in this bed, like, explain this oxygen bed to me that you were going to go chill in before the show. I got to hear about
it. It is so funny you just said that, because I actually missed out on the oxygen tank because I had to meet up with two other friends to like talk about training this week. We're scheduling some sessions, and then it's so funny because I was going to go to that oxygen tank with Todd Duffy, and here Todd Duffy is. He literally just came by to pick up some clothes he left. So it's literally like, it's funny you say that. I didn't go. I skipped it today. But what it is, it's an oxygen, like, it basically increases oxygen for you to breathe in the air. Your ears start popping, and you're in this little, like I said, it looks like a pill pod. It's like a pod, and you're just cramped up in it, and you just sleep for an hour and just breathe in a ton of extra oxygen.
Dude, that seems like, you mentioned it to me earlier, and I have to agree with you. I'm not trying to steal your statement, but you said something to me like, this is something that every human being should, like, sleep in at night.
Oh, yeah, agreed. Everybody should. It would be nice if, you know, the whole of society promoted true health and preventative care, because if it did, you know, it'd be like a natural thing where anybody with like a $15,000 a year income could afford a really simple, like, oxygen increasing bed, because obviously, you know, when you're going around cars all day and dirty air, and obviously maybe you're not breathing right all day and paying attention to your breathing, so you're not getting as much oxygen and clean oxygen throughout the day. So, you know, at night, to be able to get double what you would normally get breathing regularly, even if you're a deep breather when you sleep, now you're getting double the oxygen, and it would probably make up over time and maybe add, you know, 5 or 10 years onto someone's life. Quality years, you know? It's like, it's a good tool. And, I mean, when I get a chance to go to one, like I missed it today, but when I get a chance, I try to go and at least spend an hour in there, sometimes, you know, 90 minutes, listen to a Joe Rogan podcast or something, and just fall asleep in the thing, breathing.
Dude, that, like, I need this in my life. This sounds like the place to be. It's like the tanning bed of good health.
They have bigger ones, too, that wouldn't be as claustrophobic. There's definitely some claustrophobic people, but, you know, even sleeping with an oxygen mask on at night, I mean, that would be useful. I mean, I just think any time you can increase oxygen like that, it's simple, you know, sleep with it. Can you imagine 6 or 7 hours in one of those things, then getting out and doing, if you had the time on a Saturday, doing 2 or 3 more hours of sleeping in, like, a comfortable bed? I mean, you'd be in REM sleep, like, so fast.
Yo, it sounds odd, like, yo, man, I got to go get right on some of this oxygen. I like this. I like this idea. Just oxygenate up, son, all day.
Hey, I definitely don't condone what's that shit that Armstrong was doing. It's like EP something, emo. It's like they call it blood doping. That's what everyone call it, blood doping. You put, like, extra red cells in the blood. It's like a technical term for it. I don't know.
That's fantastic.
They add red blood cells, but that's not oxygen, I guess.
Well, let me flip the script on you, like, 180 from this angelic, peaceful dreamfulness that it feels like.
Direct.
I got a I go hard. It's more of the words, son.
Do the sail.
That's how we do
it. The sail of the ship. You tell us where to go. You blow the winds wherever.
That's a. I'm gonna get that tattooed on my back. He bloweth the winds wherever. I love that. So listen, man. One of the things I know we can't talk a whole lot just yet about it, but I do want to ask something that I figured you probably could tell me.
Okay.
We've seen the commercials for the Ultimate Fighter season 21 that you're a part of, and here's my question.
Yeah.
Is the rivalry the for realness? Is it for real? Have you seen it in person? Is it real?
Well, this is what I can tell you. Like, for example, they've already gone in on 3 articles, part 1, part 2, part 3 of the history, not only rivalry, but of American Top Team and all that, and they've done the same with the Black Zane. So they've really covered the rivalry before the show very well. So I can talk all about that. And at the end of the day, I can just tell you this. The fucking show is amazing. And everything about it, as the UFC would say, because they've already said it, they say it on it's their quoted term, as real as it gets. It's as real as it gets. The UFC does not lie about their marketing. And yeah, everything about it, it's real.
That's strong. Awesome, man.
The pre-rivalry. The pre-rivalry was, you know, Dan and, you know, what's his name? Glenn's wife was taking fitness classes. Glenn was, I think he owns Husky Tools. He's really rich. He came in, watched his wife do fitness classes. He was kind of out of shape. You know, I don't think he was too, fit or anything. He just watched and really liked the MMA. And I don't think this is all according to Dan. So, you know, I wasn't there, but, you know, Dan's my dude, and I really do, I haven't heard him bullshit ever. I haven't caught him in a bullshit story yet, so I got to give it to him. And he told me that, you know, Glenn basically started watching, saying, man, it would be cool to open my own gym. And as he would watch his wife take these fitness classes, he was going up to fighters and slowly approaching as, like, you know, oh, well, let's open a fitness gym or this and that, and let's open a conditioning gym. That's what it was. He wanted to open a conditioning gym and be associated with APT. And from there, I guess Dan was suspicious. So Dan was kind of like, nah, dude, nah, can't do that. And he started, you know, offering money to a bunch of guys. What I can confirm, though, regardless of what happened, is the dude definitely offered a ton of money to a lot of guys, not only at ATT, but from other gyms, you know, like Rashad and stuff. And I don't blame a lot of the guys. Like, I don't blame a lot of the guys from other gyms that come to train with the Black Zillions. Some guy calls you up offering to give you a free place to stay and to train with the best in the world, you know, in South Florida. It's like, of course you're going to come, especially if you're some guy at a smaller gym, but you got talent. No shit, you're going to go. But, yeah, basically, he offered a bunch of guys. Dan was really pissed because a lot of the guys that left from ATT were shady about it, like did it behind his back. And, you know, anytime you do what Dan's done for people, and then they go shady on you like that. It's like, it's one thing to come up to him and say, hey, this guy's offering me a lot of money. This is a big opportunity for me. I guarantee you, he might have been pissed at first or a little bit, like, weird about it. But if you really told him it's what you wanted, I guarantee you he would have, you know, super hard feelings for him. But they did it shady. So that created not necessarily, like, for me, I can't blame anybody because I wasn't there. But for me, it's always been a hardcore, like, just if we're fighting a Black Zillion, we're going hard, you know, like we would anywhere else. But one, you know, they're going to be pretty fucking tough. You know, they're going to be well-trained. And hell yeah, they're a cross-town rivalry. Like, I want to take them fucking out and put them on the roster. Like they do us. We all want to put each other on our fucking scoreboard, on our resume, you know. Like, my roommate, Jake, he's, you know, he's Team Lanky to the fucking bone. He's 6'3", 170. And he fought a Black Zillion back in, I think it was, November of 2013, he fought their up-and-coming guy that everyone was talking about. He was supposed to be really sick at kickboxing, had a lot of amateur fights, was like, you know, had something like 20 amateur fights between kickboxing. And he was from the Netherlands. He was like one of those guys, supposed to have a good ground game. And he was, I think he was either 0-0 or 1-0, and Jake was 1-1 at the time. And it was on CFA, so they had like really nice production, and he had all the Black Zillions in his corner. And it was me, one of our kickboxing coaches, Makahau, and Conan in Jake's corner, and like across the cage with cornering against the Black Zillions. And dude, that fight was so awesome, and fought our asses off, and Jake choked him in the third. But it was, dude, it was like, and that's just one of many, man. I'm not trying to ramble on, but that's one of many. So there's definitely a huge rivalry. I mean, there's, you know, for a lot of guys, there's definitely a healthy respect on both sides. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all guys chasing the same thing, so we got more in common than not. But at the end of the day, when it really comes, like, when it comes down to being at the cage, at the fight, I mean, there might be some handshakes and shit, but it's like, we know what each other wants. We want brutal knockouts. Like, you know, if I'm cornering my guy or if I'm the one fighting, I want to knock him out brutally in 20 seconds. And, like, I don't want to even have to promote the whole Black Zillion thing because everyone else is talking about it. So it's like, you know what's going to come of it. And at the end of the day, too, it's definitely a business thing. It's a good rivalry because, I mean, look what it brought. It brought a lot of attention to the South Florida scene. And, you know, I think it, I mean, from a business standpoint, it definitely made ATT a lot more popular and a lot more marketable as well for the Black Zillion. So, I mean, it definitely brought a huge spotlight on the South Florida MMA scene. So I think if I had to go back and if someone said, hey, would you rather there be a Black Zillion or not? I'd say, hell yeah. That's a badass rival. That's a badass opponent. And it just makes the whole thing better, more exciting. And I'll tell you this, the show is no bullshit, man. No bullshit.
Dude, I think one of the, it's an all around amazing idea because, you know, the Ultimate Fighter, and this is just me being honest. This is how we get down on Sundays and on the show in general, real talk. But I had kind of fallen off from watching Ultimate Fighter. And then the last season or two, they really started to do some things, some changing up from the strawweight stuff. And now the fact that it's not just a rivalry, but the like going in and where they're having the fights back and forth at one another's turf and stuff. I mean, alone, like, even if I didn't know you at all, I would be tuning in for that turf war feeling. Like, that had to be hype as fuck, dude. I'm just going to say it. It had to be.
Two words. Just watch. Just watch. Yeah. And I say that with excitement. I mean, it was, and like I said, too, you know, it's like, I can't put any words out there. I can just say, just watch. But,
man.
Yeah, and we see each other out all the time. It's like just the other day, I was Jake, actually, my roommate who runs the security at several different, you know, smaller bars and clubs. Jake actually he employed back a year ago this guy on the Black Zane gym who's actually in our weight class too. He's a 170, and the dude's super cool. You know, like they work together, security, like super cool, like surfs all the time. He's got cool ass dreads, and I was riding my bike to the beach the other day with my dog in the basket, and he rides by in his pickup truck, like leaving the beach. Like, so you know, you see a bunch of them out, and it's like they're cool guys, you know. But at the end of the day, when it comes time to fight, it's like we almost are all thankful for each other. It's like, even though we're all friends, not friends, we're friendly, it's like we'd rather not be friends because we're doing better with the rivalry than not, you know. So it's almost like a friendly fuck you, but, you know, it's not really. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. But I'll tell you this, it's a fucking real rivalry. There's no doubt about that. And everyone's situation is different, man. There are some top team guys that are like, fuck all of them, fuck every one of them. And I don't blame them. They got the raw end of a deal, that, and I can't blame them for how they feel. And then there's guys like me that are kind of like on the fence. And I'm not on the fence. I'm ATC at the phone, but at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not going to fucking hate because I just don't care. I'm just not really a hater. I'm a competitor. I just want to fucking compete. We compete harder against these guys because of this, and that's fine with me. But, and, you know, there's all sorts of people that take different stances, you know. So, but I mean, let me put it this way. On the show, there's a lot of guys on both sides that are fucked into the bone. So it's not like, it ain't like, I can't say anything, but as you just look on the previews, they didn't show anybody being friendly. That's all I can say. On the trailers, if you look, no one was being friendly. And like I said, the UFC, it was as real as it gets.
Oh yeah, man, that's awesome. I cannot wait for this to come out and to see this and be a part of it as it unfolds, keeping it super real. We're coming down to the halfway mark of the show, and one of the cool things that we do is we play jams on the show now. So I'm going to play one of those, and you'll have, well, how long is this song? So you'll have like 4 minutes to reprieve and go get something to drink or, you know, do what the weasel does. But stay on the line. We're going to play this. Actually, the reason I'm playing this jam today is that on the last show, we were talking about karaoke and stuff like that. And Friday, I was supposed to go be on Jason Hicks and Jonathan Jader's podcast and do some cover songs. So I thought, I wasn't able to go, so I thought, what a way to cover both of those. So I recorded myself doing some karaoke, and I'm going to play shit on here because I'm not embarrassed about shit, and it's going down.
You're at your
It's mind. Happening.
I love it. Entertainment in the break.
So,
that's awesome.
It's gonna this is going to be an epic break. We'll be back in like 4 minutes. This is me covering a classic 90s song, Cumbersome. Enjoy it or not, I don't care. We'll see you in 4 minutes.
No, I like to believe in nervous.
that was me doing karaoke cumbersome, and I'm here with the Steve. What's up, brother? We're back.
I just got to enjoy the last 30 seconds of that song.
Dude, it was like classic 90s voice, you know, that like just that.
Oh, I can hear it. Oh, dude, we do the Harold music, bro.
It's like all you have to do is just not pronounce the last half of any word.
Any word, dude. You know what the best band, like, any band I hear like that, my buddy, he labeled them perfectly. It's always just the same thing. Three Seethers Down from Nickel Creed.
Yes, Nickel Creed. Oh, dude, yes, I agree. I agree completely, 100%. Yeah, all is like, oh, yeah, so, yeah. And then you can really just put anything behind that and sell it. And you know what sucks? And you know what? Fuck it. Let's go down this road, Steve. I want to go down this road. Because I've got a gripe with this shit. I was just talking about this the other day. Let me get aggressive for a second. Not with you, but let's get aggressive as a team.
Okay.
I think that it sucks ass that kids are allowed to buy CDs by the song in particular. Like, some of the best fucking songs I ever heard in my life was like track 11, track 12. Songs that, like, were in between ones that maybe influenced me to get the album. Like, I feel like that it, like, every CD is like, well, I'll just buy these three songs for $1.99. Screw it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the era of experiencing the album is vanishing.
It's crazy you mentioned that. Do you remember on the phone with me earlier, I said I was leaving my buddy's shop because I got my girl her birthday present?
Indeed, sir.
At that shop, I met a guy, and he was literally, like, into music production and stuff, and we had a quick conversation. Super cool guy. And he's like in music. That's what he does. He's gone to school for it before for production. He's a knowledgeable guy. And he's like, you know, though, the age of appreciating an album is over. Everything's fast now. Everything's just real quick, quick, quick. Like what you just said was like in the 2000s, like you said, people didn't appreciate albums anymore. Now it's on the internet and it's just like, oh man, cool. If it's not a Grammy in the first night, this is what this guy says. It's not a Grammy in the first night. It's, you know, it's like, give me the next thing. That was cool, but give me the next thing. It used to be an album, even in the 90s, and for me in the early 2000s, I'd hear an album, you know, at 13 by Offspring or by, you know, whoever, dude, whatever music, Sum 41, Blink-182. I'd hear an album and for six months, I'd be like on that album. I'd be like looking for different music videos. Oh, look, a music video came out for track, like you said, track 11. And it's like you really got into it. You got into who the artists were, what was behind the album. And it was definitely a lot more appreciation for the art and the effort they put into that one album. You are so very right.
Dude, like, and the more it goes that way, the more that I think that it actually influences the when you have success and that success can almost be replicated like that, it kind of makes even the music that's coming up take on that form. And it sucks because, like you said, man, I remember like waiting with my like a tape in the radio for my jam to come on so that I could capture it until I could get the whole thing, and then I'd just fall into this like spiral of the band and all of the music and not just like tracks 1 and 3 and 4 and the ballad, you know?
True that. But there's definitely still good artists out there, music, and even like something similar like comedy, where they're not just, like you said, trying to figure out, well, let's just figure out a slogan and make this slogan a song, you know, look at the wrist, dude. Some just stupid slogan, let's turn it to a song, call it an album. It'll make them bounce in a club one night while they're on drugs, and then we'll just give them something else tomorrow. You know, it's like you said, it's definitely becoming quantity over quality. And but there's still guys out there doing it right. There are. And like, I the first example that popped into my head of someone who does it right is like a Bill Burr. You know, Bill Burr as a comedian, he's not a musician, but from what I've heard, it's a very similar market. And as a comedian, he comes out so genuine to himself with something new every time. Like, it's always new material, but it's always his style. It's like he figures out how to blend his style with great new material that relates to you too. Like, yeah, I've heard him make a lot of different types of people laugh. So there's still quality musicians out there and still quality comedians out there that create that
A guy that comes to mind in the music industry to me that I've listened to, been listening to a little bit recently, and is actually it generally the style of music is a little bit outside of what I listen to normally, but J. Cole, his album, the one he has out 2014 Forest Hill Drive, is a great album. It's got good the writing is meaningful. He makes a lot of strong points.
What's it called?
There are no
Forest Hill Drive.
2014 Forest Hills Drive, I believe, by J. Cole. There's a song on there actually called GOMD. And he actually points this exact topic out where the chorus of the song is like your typical it's like your typical club anthem. And then the rest of the song is a lot more meaningful, and he's kind of like, even actually before the chorus parts hits, he's like, you know, I just said all this, but everybody in the club's only interested in this part. And then they play this really sort of like wheezy influenced club mix, he makes a very strong point. And the album has no featured artist on it; it's just him.
Really?
Check it out.
South Carolina.
He is from Louisiana, so it is still down here in the southeast. Okay. I think he's from Louisiana, but somewhere in
there's some other artist too that's similar, like a similar style to J. Cole. I can't think of his name, but I swore he's from South Carolina. Oh well, but yeah, I never listened to J. Cole that much, but I know a couple people who I respect, and I would respect their musical opinion, and they like J. Cole. They've talked to me about it before. I'll definitely go check him out.
Yeah, you should. I'm a people, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not, but I've been called a music Nazi because I get so judgmental because I love my time period of music. So, you know, when I say something like J. Cole is something to check out, I don't mean to you, but I mean for me to even say it, to hear myself say it means that to me at least it means something.
Write
it down. So we've covered hardcore topics today. We've covered Oxygen Beds and J. Cole. This is where we're changing human society by the minute, dude. And this is what we do.
Rewriting.
This is what.
War of the Words. War rewrites history, and we are rewriting history. War of the Words.
War of the Words. I want to do an NPR version one day. Like one day we have to get together and do like a really soft voiced. War of the Words, where we talk, you know, where we get low in the mic and talk about, like, news from far-off places. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. That would be really awesome. Just like, man, that would be cool. Just War of the Words with the microphone. Like, do a real talk slow. We could even do it with a mic over the computer so it just sounds, like, digitalized.
Like some rain effects in the back, and we could do, like, book reviews, like join the Oprah Book Club or something and just... just do it. Just go, you know.
Really controversial shit, though. Like, horrid shit that, like, go against an entire group of people just so we can get attention and get on fucking, you know, get on some
dude,
followers.
Oh, let me tell you what. I had this guy on. He's a comedian and a musician here in Charleston. He also is quite the BJJ enthusiast and practitioner, Joseph Coker. And I had him on to talk about on Cerebral Sunday a couple episodes back to talk about, you know, doing stand-up comedy. And we spent 45 minutes or more talking about religion. And it got, you know, it got hardcore because neither of us are particularly faithful in the traditional sense. We're sciencey people over here on this side. So
got you in a real controversial topic there.
Yeah, the conversation got... So, and like it was in such passing because we were in such kind of mutual disagreement that it wasn't until I listened to it afterwards I was like, man, there are certain groups of people that are going to listen to this episode and be like, Eric sucks.
You're
like,
a scumbag.
I wouldn't be a dick about anything, But, man, we really touched on key topics like creation. We talked about Noah's Ark, man. We talked about all this kind of stuff. I mean, we really got in there. And Joseph just happened to have grown up going to Catholic school in his youth. So, I mean, man, what a freaking episode. You want to talk about controversy, we can definitely do that anytime.
I mean, you know, with me, I always say it like this. And I talk religion in private, you know. And I don't do it on the radio show. But I would say this. Every religion, it's pretty much a staple that thou shall not judge or ye shall not judge, whatever words you want to put it in. So first of all, I think anyone can agree on that they don't want to be judged by people that don't understand them at all and people that don't know what they're talking about, making a bunch of random judgments. So anyone can agree that we all have the right to not be judged as long as we're not, you know, pissing gasoline on fires and burning houses.
I love this.
Extremists.
Yes.
So I think that's the first thing. And then, you know, I mean, my religion, you know, I'm in the now. I think heaven's a great idea. So I think as long as you stay in the present moment, do your best to make it heaven, whether it be the decision to tell a lie or not, you know, in heaven you would assume no one lies. So if someone's asking you something and it really is important, you know, don't lie to them, you know, whether it be a family member, always try to do what you know is just right. Like, obviously, if someone's to say, are you really hurt? And you is someone really, really hurt? You might tell a white lie to calm someone down and not make them as fearful or as anxious, but you're doing it to calm them down, lower their heart rate and blood pressure, and make them healthier, you know? So just always do what's right.
Human aspect. I love that fact. Like, you run to go help someone who's been, like, wounded. Yeah, like you. Yes, exactly. Like you go run to help someone who's just been hurt or something. You're not like, hold on, I'm gonna help you, but quick, are you Protestant? Like, you know what you gotta do? You dig past that to the human element of just doing what is good and right and what drives you in truth, and not there's no limitations when it comes to that, and there should be more practice to that. I love that idea. It's very well. You're changing things.
Well, there's definitely, like, if you just look at – I mean, if you were just looking at it from a – let's pretend there's aliens and you're just some random alien. You think just like a human, but you've never been to Earth before. You see the way we're behaving, but maybe you're a rich alien that's had, you know, billions of dollars for 300 years and you've been alive that long. So you're looking at humans. You're going to go, damn, they look like a mix of angels and apes. I mean, because, like you said, one second there's the human element of, you know, for example, a guy who robbed banks for a living might all of a sudden see an old woman or even an old man or a young man, whoever, get hit by a car on a bicycle, and he's just somehow he's going to run over there and grab him, even though he pointed guns at people's faces. Maybe, you know, there's things like that. And then there's the apish aspect of, holy shit, I can't believe I'm holding up this bank. Get on the fucking ground because you're scared shitless. I think the ape element, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the ape element comes strictly out of fear. Like, what, even if you're on the offensive, it's for fear of being on the defensive. So it's out of fear. And then the human element's out of love. So you got love and fear, and it's made an angel element and an ape element. Oh, man. That's what it looks like anyway.
I like that. I think we had a conversation on one of the other shows about apes and aliens' genetics being mixed for human life. I think that was you and me one time.
Well, didn't we talk about that? It could be.
I think we did.
That's one thing I've learned, though, is, like, it could be. Because I've seen some situations that I'll hear, like, 20 different things about, and I paint all these crazy pictures, and I'm like, well, it had to be this way because that's how everyone talks about it. And then I'll see a video of the situation or something, and I'm like, that's not at all what happened. Whether even a fight, fights are great examples. I'll hear somebody's take on a fight. Oh, well, you know, this happened and that happened, and then you listen, you even go read the commentary, or you go read or hear what Joe Rogan said about it, or what Sherdog said about it, and then you look at the fight, and you're like, did no one remember this kid punting the other kid's leg out from under him? Did no one remember him almost having a guillotine to a triangle? It's like, oh, he was on his back taking punches all the time. Yeah, but the other kid almost had his shoulder torn and all the spotted and this and this and that, and he get his shoulder torn, and you could see it because he was holding his hand lower in the last 10 seconds. I mean, so it's like one thing, anything that you weren't there for, it could have been anything. So if it was aliens splicing genes with apes, I don't know. I just don't know.
You know,
it's like I wasn't there for it.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't remember who was on the show for one of these Cerebral Sundays, but or where I was having this conversation, but someone said something to me like about conscious. We were having a conversation about awareness and consciousness, and they said, "Well, you know, take a cow out in a field grazing in the grass. You know, if you were to raise his awareness level." Do you think that he would continue to stay there and graze in the field if he knew that this was all so that he would one day be led to the slaughterhouse? You know, so part of that is that, and I think that spoke a little bit to, you know, keeping yourself informed or aware or read or however it is you choose to keep your brain.
Well, would he go to the slaughterhouse because he said he's going to die anyway and he likes how the grass tastes?
Well, that might be a good. Might be sweet. See, this is why we have these conversations because now you present the other
I don't think there's a determined answer. That's the thing. There is no.
No, I like
answer.
It. No, me
if
neither.
If there was an
me
answer,
neither.
Wouldn't you be bored? Wouldn't you be bored if there was a final answer? And oh, well, we know it. It's like, what else is there to do?
Absolutely. No, I love that fact. Maybe is the greatest power of all time.
Yeah, it is. It is, dude. You can put off a lot of women with the word maybe.
Yeah. Maybe is a wonderful maybe because yes and no are so definitive. You, it's like you're done as soon as you say yes or no. That's finished. You know, maybe lets it go. You know, and that has to apply to fight life.
Sometimes I like to know yes it hurts or no it doesn't or yes it tastes good. No, yes and no is a great ultimatum in a lot of situations. But
good parameters. They're good parameters to have. I like knowing that fire is always hurts. I don't. There's never like where I'm like, man, I got to test this fire. It might be maybe this time. You know, I always know. You know that stuff is good. Those life parameters and barriers, those yeses and nos are great. Absolutely.
But they're infinite. They're infinite because it is an infinite thing. It's on or off. How does that stop? It's on or off. Light or dark. Space or objects in the space. How would you have objects without nothing for them to sit in? You know what I mean? There's got to be space. If it was all a big block wall, where would everything fit? There's already a wall there. There's already concrete there. So it's just because it's all a yes. It's all on. Just all everything just always on, then it doesn't work. It's like waves, man. It's just on and off over and over again, infinitely. Is the tree there? Is the tree not there? Is the tree green or is it not green? Is it green or orange? You know what I mean? It's if you really come down to every question, and like we said with the emotions of people, it's either ape or angel because it's either are you doing it out of fear or are you doing it out of love? You know, it's like, am I paying this mortgage on my house because I'm scared the bank will foreclose on it and my wife will think I'm a loser? Or am I paying this mortgage because I love my kids and I love my wife and they have to have a comfortable life because I love them? Are you doing it out of love or are you doing it out of fear? And that'll change a lot of things, I think.
That's beautiful. You know what, man? It reminds me, it's very Machiavellian, that the prince, when you read that, or about the ruling with love or fear. I love that, you know, that idea and the stuff that stems from that. And it applies assuredly in fight life, as does the great maybe. I mean, that's got to be, like, the thought that you could attain these things is part of the drive in and of itself. The maybe of MMA and of your career and of the fighting is what gives it that. The possibility of yes is very powerful.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's like for a long time, I heard everyone, oh, what if you fail? What if you, like, you know, what if this, where are you going to be? You're going to be broke in 30 with no this and that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, I'm not a dumbass. Like, I'm learning a lot what I'm doing. Like, if I'm doing something, it's got to involve learning. So I'm learning a lot. And you know what? If I, you know, get my foot chopped off in a fucking chainsaw accident or a surfing incident, I get bit off by a shark, and I decide, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to fight anymore. I'd still train and stuff with one foot or no legs or whatever. I'd still train and do fitness stuff for fun, but I'd move on to the next thing. And it's like, you're like, what are you going to do? It's like, dude, I'm always going to push it. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you die when you're 60 and you got no money. It's like, yeah, you die when you're 80 and you got money. 6-foot hole, dude. Like, you know, it don't change. So I'm always going to do something that I enjoy doing. And like you just said, it's like I enjoy it. I'm not doing it out of fear that, you know, next month I can't pay the rent. I mean, I've been in those situations in the sense you have to have a healthy sense of fear, too. I've been in those situations where it's like I've had to work a lot of jobs I don't like because I have to make money. So, I mean, that is what it is. And it's out of fear of not having the money. I mean, but, you know, it is what it is. It was always in the end to do something I love. So it was definitely worth it. So if you got to deal with a little fear to, you know, you got to have fear to have love. Or you wouldn't know what love is.
And this is why you need to be the type of person that listens to the entire album instead of just a few pieces. Because when you just listen to a few pieces, you miss the entire message. How can you read a book if you
you're
just
right.
tear some pages out?
You're the man. You're right. There's so much missed stuff. How much genius is lost in, like, just old, like, rotted pages or CDs or records that no one listened to, but it's like if people had kept the appreciation up, that would have been like the ultimate. Like, how much genius was in people's souls that they got out and people just didn't read to the end?
Well said. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
which is a fast world, so you can't blame them. Maybe they're too busy writing their own pages. I do miss a lot of genius myself. I'm guilty, and it's because I'm trying to write my own pages. So, to the credit, but it's like, you know, at the end of the day, they could still listen through because they're missing a page in their book.
Absolutely.
You know,
and you
could be
sometimes
missing
those chapters are important. You never know when key characters may come in or concepts that you may miss.
Hell yeah. I learned a lot of life lessons from listening to the whole Blink-182 album.
Oh yeah, man! Like even back in those days, when the corporation was kind of seeping in, you knew that you kind of would get this feeling. You would listen to the first like five tracks, and those would be the ones that, you know, were insisted to be at the beginning. And really, some of the major, most powerful songs from these artists would be at the end because that would be the place that they were allowed to put basically whatever they wanted. So you'd really get these strong.
Yeah.
And that became the era of the secret track, dude. You remember these? That's totally gone now. But you remember those times, man, where you'd fast forward for 55 minutes to hear this 1 minute crazy song from your favorite band? It's, you know, like, oh, I can't believe this. They put it on there. It's secret track 12.
Yeah. I remember the first cassette I got. I got a cassette. Yeah, you had to fast forward to the secret tracks on like Tool albums and stuff. I remember I was 8 years old and my best friend was 10 years old and we were at the beach with my parents, like at a little beach house, having like, you know, those childhood best times of your life. And me and my friend went into a, was it like a FYE or a CD connect, not CD connection, like CD, disc jockey. It was a
FYE. That was one of them.
Or FYE, and we went into what he was either disc jockey or FYE, and we went in at like Myrtle Beach, and I remember where my grandma was like, you can get one like cassette, you know, you can get one thing because all they had was a cassette player, and I didn't know anything about music, dude. At this point, I had just moved to a new neighborhood with a bunch of like older friends, and like I just listened to whatever my parents listened to, and I didn't even know what it was called. So he was like, yeah, man, I'll get this. Sorry, I'm outside. He goes, I'll get this Beastie Boys album, and you get Offspring. So I got Offspring Americana, and he got, like, I can't remember which one it was, but he got a Beastie Boys album. I listened to the shit out of that tape over and over and over nonstop. I still remember when the song comes on, I can lip sync it.
Oh, yeah. I had Unplugged in New York, and I used to listen. Unplugged in New York was one of the first ones, and Green Day's Dookie album were, like, two of the first things that I got on my own, and I just murdered these two cassettes, like, over and over and over. And that's the thing is, like, you know, you don't get that feeling anymore, that sort of, I don't want to say, I don't know what it is, but when you just listen to the two or three songs, you don't get that experience. Like, you just told me a story that you remember about the first time that you got this album. Like, who's gonna remember, like, oh, you remember that, remember the first time I bought that Kanye West song off of iTunes for 99 cents?
It
changed my life.
Like,
no, you're not gonna remember that. You're not gonna remember because you didn't have a real experience with this music. You just heard it, which is very different.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Steve, listen, I got 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes left, brother. Anybody you want to give shout-outs? I know it does, dude. It's almost been an hour. I told you, dude. We think about this, man. We used to try to do this in a half hour. Can you believe it?
Oh, that is crazy. That is crazy.
So, man, let me hear, man. Anything you got, shout-outs, anyone you want to point the spotlight on or the finger?
Definitely my mom and dad, because they listen and watch everything, and they're awesome. I'm going to even shout out my Aunt Vicky and Uncle Ronnie and my girlfriend Amanda. She's awesome.
Boom,
and
Rob, love you.
Shout out all the coaches, all my training partners, my douchebag roommate Jake. He might listen to this later. He can fuck off. And, yeah, just all my friends, family, and loved ones. Y'all know exactly who you are. And my masseuse, Diana, today. She did an awesome job. She's a great job. Diana Isley, anybody in South Florida listening, is the best masseuse. She goes out of her way. Her whole family was down from New York and at the beach, and she came all the way to her house to massage me. She insisted. She is awesome.
That is fantastic. Keeping the weasel loose. I got one last question for you, dude, about,
sure.
And this is Ultimate Fighter related. Did the mullet reign supreme as far as, like, when you went in there and rocking it, did they respect the power of the mullet?
All I can say is look at the commercial and look at the picture they posted.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
The comic
Steve,
book picture,
man.
And the commercials.
Dude, such an epic piece of art. I love it. And
it was
fun. Thank you as always. It was great that we finally had this epic reunion, dude. So as the show rolls out, man, we'll have to get up like weekly or biweekly or something and just have fun with it, man, and I'm so glad to have you back around and stuff and on all these awesome opportunities.
I'm glad to be talking to you.
Hell yeah, bro.
Anytime, man. All you got to do is call me up.
Yeah, you know it, man. Everybody else, check out Steve on this coming up 21st season of The Ultimate Fighter, ATT versus the Black Zane. It's going to be awesome. You can check him out on Facebook, Steve the Creepy Weasel Montgomery. On behalf of myself, man, this has been another fantastic Cerebral Sunday with War of the Worlds, brought to you by SSFightStore.com. And, you know, great show. Thank you so much. Make sure to tune into this one, man. It's going to be intense. And like Steve said, as real as it gets, and I'm going to leave you with the same two words, just watch.